The headlines this hour. The Yemeni army says it has fired 3 ballistic missiles into Saudi Arabia, response to the kingdom's recent deadly airstrikes on Yemen. Christmas celebrations are canceled or scaled back for the second consecutive year as a new wave of COVID cases hits parts of the world. Videos of a gathering in which Hindu hardliners call for mass killings of Muslims spark outrage in India. We'll have a report from New Delhi. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The Yemeni army says it has struck important and sensitive sites in the Saudi port city of Jizan. The army spokesman says the Saudi positions were targeted with modern precision-guided missiles. The retaliatory attack follows intensified Saudi airstrikes against Yemen in the past few days. The Yemeni official said that his country will carry out more operations against the Saudi regime if Riyadh continues its acts of aggression against the Yemeni people. The kingdom launched its war in Yemen in March 2015, killing hundreds of thousands of civilians and causing a dire humanitarian situation. Abdul Latif Al-Washali is a correspondent who joins us on the phone from Yemen's capital, Sana'a. Abdul Latif, tell us more about this and what are the sensitive sites that were targeted?
Thank you so much. The Yemeni army absolutely has attacked specific targets, and they mean by that they are military targets being used for military purposes. The Yemeni army will never attack any civilian targets. As you tell me, the police planes do. They are attacking the airports being used for military purposes. They are attacking any facility that is being used for attacking the Yemeni people. The Yemeni army is practicing the right of responding to the Saudi attacks against civilians. Saudi Arabia has been escalating this attack against Yemeni civilians during the past few months, and they attacked residential areas. We saw the latest crime committed yesterday. They killed their women along with their baby and spoke to another man, and a few other people were injured. They are committing crimes against the Yemeni people, but unfortunately, the international community has not yet done anything to stop these crimes from being committed by Saudi Arabia. They are still providing the cover-up for Saudi Arabia to continue the crimes, to continue the genocide it is committing against the Yemeni people. The Yemeni army will absolutely carry further and wider and larger attacks against Saudi Arabia unless it stops its crimes, unless it stops its air strikes against residential areas against the Yemeni people.
Thank you for that. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, correspondent there from Sana'a. Church leaders accuse Israel of anti-Christian bias and inaction in the face of attacks on holy sites and clergy. In a statement, Al-Quds church leaders cited several cases of assault and vandalism. They said that such attacks are aimed at driving the Christian community out of the holy city. The religious leaders further slammed Tel Aviv for admitting Jewish travelers despite a coronavirus-related travel ban for all foreigners. The head of the Greek Orthodox Church in Al-Quds says both the Christian and Muslim communities are being affected by the regime's bias. Tensions are spiraling in the occupied West Bank as Israel intensifies its use of deadly force against Palestinians there. The regime has been denounced for its tactics, but refuses to change course.
The situation in the Israeli-occupied West Bank has become highly volatile. Israeli settlers have stepped up their attacks against Palestinian communities across the occupied territory. And Israeli forces have been using lethal force against the Palestinians more than often. Palestinian men, women, and even children have been losing their lives to Israeli gunfire. 2021 has been the deadliest year for Palestinian children since 2014. Increasingly frustrated with unending Israeli occupation, ongoing land grab, deadly violence, and lack of international action, some Palestinians have tried to take matters into their own hands by staging car ramming and stabbings against Israelis as some form of resistance against the regime. but the number of fatalities on the two sides is not comparable at all, as Israeli forces use disproportionate force against any form of protest or resistance against the regime. For years, human rights groups have accused Israel of following a shoot-to-kill policy. But things are apparently getting worse these days after the regime recently revised its open-fire policies. Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank are now allowed to open fire on Palestinians who throw rocks or Molotov cocktails even when they don't pose an immediate threat.
I think what the regime is trying to achieve here can be expressed in two words. Dead Palestinians is what it's trying to achieve. One of the major objectives of Zionism is to clear Palestine of all Palestinians and have only Zionist Jews there.
The new open-fire policy blatantly violates international law and has drawn widespread condemnation.
Despite mounting condemnation, Israel is enforcing its open-fire policy in the occupied West Bank. Some say the new rules will lead to an increase in field executions. Palestinians are saying that the rules encourage deliberate killing of innocent people.
Palestinians held a funeral on Thursday for a young man who was killed by Israeli gunfire. The mourning procession was held in the city of Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. The 26-year-old Mohammad Isa Abbas was shot in the back when Israeli forces opened fire on his car on Wednesday. Such deadly shootings of Palestinians seem to be on the rise in the West Bank. On Tuesday, a Palestinian motorist was gunned down in the northern occupied West Bank after what the Israeli military said was an attempted car ramming of soldiers at a checkpoint. Israel seems determined to keep up its use of deadly force against the Palestinians, even when there is no immediate threat. Earlier in December, the United Nations Human Rights Office said it was, quote, shocked by the apparent extrajudicial execution of a Palestinian man who had injured an Israeli with a knife, but was shot and lying on the ground. Israeli forces continued to shoot the man from point blank, even when he was posing no threat. Such shootings are undoubtedly extrajudicial field executions that violate international law. Will Israel's illegal and hard-handed tactics force the Palestinians into submission? Probably not, as Palestinian resistance groups are calling for intensified acts of retaliation against Israel across Palestinian territories. The leaders of Hamas and Islamic Jihad recently stressed the need for continued resistance operations in the West Bank, saying that the Zionist regime's aggression in the region would have serious consequences and that Tel Aviv would pay a heavy price for its aggressions.
The more oppression they bring upon Palestinians, the more resistance they're going to get. And in fact, this has been true historically for any people that are under oppression. When you're under oppression, you're going to resist, and there will be people who are willing to pay any price to resist.
The occupied West Bank could experience more tensions and deadly violence against the Palestinians in the coming weeks, as the Israeli regime refuses to change its dangerous course.
The United Nations General Assembly has backed an open-ended war crimes probe against Israel, including into the regime's recent 11-day war on Gaza. An overwhelming majority of 125 countries voted in favor of the investigation. It was initially approved by the UN Human Rights Council in the aftermath of the Gaza war in May. The inquiry allows for a review of Israeli human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territories. No such open-ended investigation has ever been launched against any other UN member. The vote came after Israel's amendment to defund the probe was rejected 125-8, with 34 abstentions. Back in May, the Israeli military launched a devastating war on the besieged Gaza Strip. It killed at least 260 Palestinians, including over 60 children. McNabb here is an activist from the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign who joins us. Well, this seems like a very positive development. What are your thoughts?
What a devastating defeat for Israel. I mean, in order to carry on the crimes in Palestine, the massacres, the most recent one your correspondent alluded to, a relatively small massacre of 260 people in May, but in order to carry that out, Israel knows that it needs to prevent opposition taking shape around the world. And this vote of 125-8 is absolutely remarkable. There'll be a lot of headaches in Israel today as they think of how they're going to try to deal with this. Because Israel's embarked on a fight, not just in Palestine, where they have all the guns and the weapons and the aircraft and the helicopters, but it's a fight inside Britain, for example, to close down opposition from the Labour Party, to actually fight in almost every university to try to prevent criticism of Israel. And therefore Israel seems to be massively overreached. So this is this will give some succour to the Palestinians, but I think also it brings into sharp focus Israel's attitude to the United Nations. I mean, Israel claims its legitimacy, what it calls its legitimacy, to be a state with no borders and embarking on the ethnic cleansing of the indigenous people. It takes its legitimacy from a vote of the United Nations, which I think was a mistake, but to admit Israel in 48 or 49. But at the same time, the language that Israel uses against the United Nations is extremely bitter. And yesterday, Bennett, the Prime Minister, said that this inquiry was a new low for the UN. It was an inquiry, quote, which had no right to exist. So Israel has long since lost the battle for public opinion. There's no doubt about that. The data is overwhelming and it's very consistent. But it seems now to be losing the battle in some of the major international institutions. The ICC has opened up an inquiry about possibly putting Israel on trial for its crimes. Now the General Assembly has taken this stand. Whether or not it manages to get through the UN, which is very doubtful, it makes it much easier for those people campaigning in support of Palestine all over the world to make fresh advances. So the BDS movement, when we relate to the UK government, UK government promised a few days ago to take steps to make BDS illegal. It just became much more difficult in the light of this UN body. My own government in Scotland is balanced between a pro-Palestinian public opinion and its desire to placate the Israeli lobby. That now moves the balance in our favour. So yes, I think it's a very, very positive step. It brings together for more and more millions of people the two words of Israel and crime. Israel, human rights violations. It's beginning to seep into world public opinion more and more deeply. So yes, I think it's tremendous news today.
What does it mean when it says it's an open-ended UNHRC war crime probe?
Well, Israel took a very interesting tack yesterday to try to oppose this. It talked about money. Oh, this would cost money, and the Israeli amendment against the motion focused on the cost, and it asked delegates to oppose it on cost grounds, because it is open-ended. It isn't going to end in 2024 or even 2025. This is a dagger pointed at the heart of Israel in terms of world public opinion. There is no end to it. And it may go on for a very, very long time. That means year after year, although the Palestinians are paying a gigantic price in terms of people who are assassinated and tortured and jailed for 5 or 10 or 40 years sometimes, although they're paying a terrible price, the acid that's eating away at Israeli legitimacy, this was a great example yesterday. So it's open-ended. It doesn't have a definite cut-off point. Israel has to live with this going forward.
Thank you for that, Mick Napier, activist of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Moving on to COVID, it's putting a damper on Christmas and New Year's Eve events for the second year as it forces the cancellation of celebrations and travel plans. This year, the virus is surging because of its newly identified Omicron variant. The strain is spreading fast in Europe. Major cities there, including London, Paris, Berlin, Athens, and Rome, have already announced all public Christmas and New Year celebrations are cancelled. However, in other parts of the world, the ceremonies are scaled back. That means they do take place, but safety precautions are in place. Brazil and Australia are among these countries. In the U.S. also, fewer revelers will attend the celebrations in New York's Times Square, and everyone should wear a mask. Omicron is also causing disruptions for millions of passengers worldwide, as thousands of flights are canceled due to staff shortages. A correspondent in Paris, Kristen Hahn, tells us about the measures France is taking during the holiday season to control the COVID surge taking place there. Let's hear what he had to say.
Well, 94,000 new contaminations have been detected on the last 24 hours, which is a record for the third consecutive day. So that's why French President Macron decided to organize a new ministerial council on Monday to decide on new restrictive measures. So already the gatherings on the New Year's Eve are forbidden, and the vaccination campaign is accelerated with pushing people to get the third jab after 3-4 months, which is now after 5 or 6 months of the second jab. So there might be new decisions. So what's on the table to be discussed on Monday are the mandatory health pass that would certainly be transferred in a mandatory vaccination pass. That means that a negative PCR test is not sufficient anymore to get into public places. So people have to prove that they are vaccinated for the second, even for the third time. Also on the table will be a discussion about a new curfew or a new lockdown. Probably a lockdown will not be decided because it has an important economic and negative economic impact, and also people are very discontent about the new lockdown. But the curfew might be decided, so it will allow people to go to work and to come home, but stay at home.
Police in India have opened an investigation after videos from a religious gathering emerged on social media showing monks advocating ethnic cleansing of Muslims. Police say that they will take strict action against those who fan the flame of hatred in the city of Haridwar. And that does it for World News. Do stay with us.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Forged contracts, inhuman working conditions, faulty equipment, unpaid wages, barely enough to eat, horrid housing, and the constant fear of violence. Now perhaps you'd be surprised to learn that there's a description of working conditions in the Czech Republic and its booming forestry industry. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. This week on Aperture, we will go to the heart of Europe to meet workers who experience working conditions that could best be compared to slave labor in the state forests of the Czech Republic. The tree workers' case is the biggest case of labor exploitation to have been exposed in Europe over the last 20 years. Since 2009, at least 2,000 workers, mainly from Vietnam, but also from Romania, Bulgaria, Hungary, Slovakia, and the Ukraine, have been forced to work under some very harsh conditions. Stay with us for the first part of this documentary.
Pha Hung Long from Vietnam worked in the Czech state forest for 3 months. He never stopped hoping that the working conditions would improve. He was one of the last in his group to flee. When his work permit expired, through no fault of his own, he sought help. He told people about how he had been lured with false promises into working in the forest. Long had no idea that his story would arouse such interest. Three young lawyers from Prague, Pavel Chizinski, Matas Jira, and Stepanka Mikova, took on his case.
I got in touch with this case first time January 2010 when I was visited by one Vietnamese worker who said that he worked in the forest and that he worked there for 3 months and was not paid. So I started to kind of get deeper in the situation, and he was surprised that I don't know about, you know, the situation, because there were hundreds of people. And we started to investigate the case more, and we found that he was absolutely right, that there were hundreds of people. The way how they did it was quite smart and was very efficient. And it was not only for Vietnamese workers. They basically exploited each significant minority in the Czech Republic. They started with Vietnamese, and they kept going with Mongolians, Romanians, Bulgarians, and then they ended up with Slovak citizens.
The attorneys made some disturbing findings as they researched the so-called tree workers case. Many victims were also from the new EU states. Around 600 came from Romania, as well as dozens from Slovakia, Bulgaria, Poland, Lithuania, and Hungary.
We met some of the damaged persons, and they were really in the terrible conditions. They are without money also, and sometimes they are suffering also from the hunger, etc. So we met these people, and we decided together with La Strada that we have to help them, give them our hands, because who would do it if we don't do that?
The case for me is one of the most shocking cases I've heard about in recent years in the Czech Republic concerning labour rights, concerning the treatment of foreigners. And for that reason, I wanted to write something about it and to investigate it. At the time, I didn't have any idea, when I wrote the first story, I didn't have any idea that it would lead on to further stories. But as it has, I'm pleased that I can be involved in publicising this case, because I think it is something which people in the Czech Republic and in Europe and in the rest of the world need to know about.
Mm-hmm.
The Czech Republic is one of the more densely forested countries in Europe. A third of its land is forest. Over 60% of this area belonged to the Czech state and is mainly administered by the state-run forest management Lesy České republiky. It is an authority which is constantly being criticized, especially for its lack of transparency when awarding public contracts.
Over the last few years, the state forests of the Czech Republic, that's Lesy České republiky, have given a tender to a large private firm called Les & Forest to perform most of the work in the state forest.
Les & Forest is a subsidiary of Les Holding, one of the largest companies in the timber industry, with an annual turnover of over 160 million euros. The state-run Forest Management Authority is Les & Forest's biggest contractor for forestry work and trade in timber.
Les & Forest don't actually do all of the work themselves. They actually employ subcontractors to do some of it. Now, one of these subcontractors was Ifuma Carter. Ifuma Carter employed a group of Vietnamese people who were living here in the Czech Republic to perform various jobs within the forest. These jobs included replanting of trees, preparing trees for plantation, preparing the ground, and so on.
Vietnam has about 90 million inhabitants and is one of the fastest growing economies in Asia. Nonetheless, the population is poor. The average annual income is below $800. More than 1.5 million young people flood the domestic labor market every year. There is thus a great demand for good jobs abroad. The communist country has set up institutions which specialize in sending workers abroad. Owing to tighter caps on the number of non-EU migrants, Vietnamese workers have fewer secure paths into Europe. Corrupt middlemen take advantage of this fact, organize work visas through the black market, and sell them for extortionate sums. The Czech embassy in Hanoi is also being criticized by the media for corruption and for harassing citizens applying for a Czech visa.
La Strada Czech Republic is an NGO which provides services for people who have been trafficked or exploited. And we provide shelter, accommodation, social counseling, but also legal services. The three workers' case started 1 year ago, and then we learned about the case more, and we just realized that there are quite a strong indicators of human trafficking. And there was estimations that there are almost like thousands of injured people in this case. We have never faced such a case where are thousands of people injured. This is something incredible.
The governments of the United Nations have agreed on a definition of human trafficking. Trafficking in persons shall mean the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring or receipt of persons by means of the threat or use of force or other forms of coercion, of abduction, of fraud, of deception, of the abuse of power or of a position of vulnerability for the purpose of exploitation.
Vietnamese community was very much vulnerable because many of people who came here were extremely indebted, and I think the exploiters, they were very much aware that these people are in big need of any job or even, I would say, any shelter.
During the severe economic crisis in spring 2009, the job agency Afumikata organized three recruitment meetings on the outskirts of Prague. Around 600 migrant workers attended the events, held in the Vietnamese restaurant Dong Do. Nguyen Kim Phung was also present. He worked as a video reporter and then as a translator.
Basically, the scheme was always the same. They told them that, you know, they have job and it will be work for Lesicheska Republiky, which is the state-owned company that owns most of the forests in the Czech Republic. This looked like very trustful cooperation, and that's what they abused. They signed something that was called educational contract, and in Czech. So they didn't understand the contract they were signing.
Two names continuously crop up in connection with the search for those responsible: David Mirkos and Jindrich Martinak. Ryan Scott is one of the few journalists who has been able to interview Mirkos.
Any of the complaints that I presented to Mirkos, he just put down to their own laziness. So my ultimate impression of him was of someone who certainly not in any way interested in the basic rights of other people. And I have to say that he also gave the impression of being quite xenophobic, because he mentioned that the nationalities of the workers was a reason for them not working adequately. He obviously thinks that it is acceptable to exploit people who are foreign. I also feel, though, that he was not entirely in charge, and it's a pity that I didn't have the opportunity to speak to Martinak, because I feel that Martinak is really much more at the centre of this, but he doesn't really want to speak with the press.
It took the attorneys many months to collect evidence and locate exploited workers who were actually prepared to make a statement to the police. No one wanted to speak about their experiences. Many were unaware of their rights, and many others had already returned home.
From the summer 2010, we filed 51 criminal complaints, and we are representing more than 90 persons right now. But we know about much more damaged persons, and we are speaking with them, and we are trying to find more damaged people.
I'm looking at the timesheets of workers that worked in April and May 2009 in Czech Forest. This group of nine people started work on 6th, and they are planting trees till the 30th, till the end of the month. You can see that here are 2 days when there is nothing, so that was only these 2 days they didn't work. Each of the timesheet is signed by a representative of a company, Lesson Forest, and pursuant to these tables, the workers were supposed to be paid, which didn't happen. Their response is that it is not their business because they were not employers of these people, but their subcontractor, Afumikata, was the employer, but it's basically hiring a guy for dirty work. The dirty work was executed for Lesson Forest and for Lesicheska Republiky.
timber trade is a major industry in Europe and a fiercely competitive market. The lowest price determines which company receives the contract. In 2009, the gross output of the Czech timber trade and wood processing industry was about 1.7 billion euros. A third of the Czech timber is exported to Germany and Austria. Its low price makes it a popular raw material. Profit optimization and cutthroat competition have led to so-called dumping wages, fixed-term contracts from employment agencies, and ultimately often result in exploitation. One of the less positive aspects of our economic system.
The case also includes Romanian workers. I've spoken with groups of men in Romania, three different groups from three different towns, and they all say the same thing. They were all promised about 1,500 euros per month, and none of them got the full payment. And the longer the men stayed working in the Czech Republic, less of the money they received. And it's not just a question of payment either. The Romanian workers seemed to be treated like slaves. They were verbally abused. They were threatened. They were forced to work in the rain. They were not provided with adequate protective clothing. When they were injured, they were not treated properly.
Mr. Martin, when he came, he didn't come alone. He came with three friends in the car. And the friends, when Mr. Martinat started to scream at us, the two people there, he has the gun, he wants to pull out. I see some guns for sure. I see some pistols, exactly. The first was gentle, kind. After that, it started to become worse. When you arrive there, everything is not even close what he tell. And after that, he tried to threaten us, to scare us. This is a case for prison. This is not a case about, I don't know why. He let me in a woods without money, without knowing where I am, without knowing the city, without nothing. Without knowing the language to go home in Romania. Nothing. He let me there, just there, with me and my friends, 22 persons.
No, I understand that you are angry, and believe me, that there are hundreds of people like you who think that Mr. Martignac and naturally Mr. Rounds as well, that they should pay for what they did. But unfortunately, we are not able to push on police so hard as we want that they proceed with the proceedings.
Czech website justice.cz or justice.cz, and what you can use this website to do is to find out who is registered with a particular company. After entering in David Murkos's name, it brought up over a dozen companies which have been registered in his name. Those companies include Afumicata, Wood Service Praha, and Madera Servizio. These same addresses turn up, these same names turn up, but for so many different companies. It does seem quite suspicious when you look on this website and you start seeing these names and you start seeing how many companies they are involved in. When you try to follow up these companies, the numbers often don't exist anymore, or they never existed at all, perhaps. Or the addresses given are not really what you would consider legitimate headquarters for businesses.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We are going to talk on the importance and significance of consultation in Islam. Consultation is an important thing to be done by each and every individual in his life, because a person cannot rely always on his own understanding and on his own perception of things, or maybe on his own opinion. Okay, he has to go out to other people and seek their advice, and that's why the concept of consultation, or you call it shura or mashwara or istishara, is highly important in both the Quran as well as hadith. There is no doubt as to the fact that through consulting with others, many personal and social problems are resolved, aren't they? Of course, they are. And when two people talk about an issue, the combination of two thought patterns acts like the coming together of two wires of different charges, which gives light to the environment. So this is indeed what we can say about the significance of consulting others. When two opinions come together, out comes an opinion which is more solid, which is stronger, which is more reliable. God Almighty describes the religious and faithful people in one of its verses. It says, وَالَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا لِرَبِّهِمْ وَأَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَأَمْرُهُمْ شُورَى بَيْنَهُمْ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ. So it is verse 38 of chapter 42. Now the translation of this verse, I could roughly translate it like this: وَالَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا, and those who respond to their Lord, وَأَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ, and keep up prayer, who consult among themselves, وَأَمْرُهُمْ شُورَى بَيْنَهُمْ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ, and who give out to the poor part of what we have given them. So this is one of those verses of the Quran which describes the religious, faithful and practicing believers, mu'mineen, as I read the verses. We understand that both wisdom and narrations combine to indicate the sensitive position and significance of consultation, our aql, the faculty of intellect. And also the narrations, as well as the Quran, which is the most authoritative in source, all of these point to the significance of consultation. So we come to understand that it's always better for Muslims, but not obligatory, of course, to make use of this Islamic command, which is the very basis of prosperity and social improvement, consulting others. Consulting other people, experts, and of course we need to consult them.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
For example, I, as a student of religion, I need to consult a doctor in matters related to health, to hygiene, and a doctor as an expert of medicine needs to consult a jurist in matters related to fiqh, to jurisprudence, to legal issues. So everybody needs to consult everybody else, you know, in matters in which he does not specialize. Now, the Prophet, I gave one example of the Prophet consulting other people in his lifetime. Of course, now I would like to give you some more examples. And these are examples which have been documented and reliable sources and narrated on the authority of different sources. The Prophet, peace be upon him, used to advise people to have consultation. And when he advised other people to consult, he himself also made use of the same command. He also consulted other people. For example, in the Battle of Badr, prior to the confrontation with the enemy, he consulted with his followers, with his ashab, and with his companions. He asked their opinions about the combat with Quraysh, you know, shall we advance, shall we confront the enemy, shall we return back, what do we have to do? So he consulted the Muhajirun, the immigrants, and the Ansar, of course. Of course, these two groups of people were always there with the Prophet. They presented two different views, but the Prophet accepted that of the Ansar, you know, about confronting the Quraysh. And also there was the Battle of Badr. The elders, you know, during this battle, the elders believed that they must stay in Medina in order to, you know, defend their strongholds by throwing arrows and stones from their strongholds and rooftops of their houses. But, you know, some young companions of the Prophet and some young men of the city of Medina preferred confronting the enemy outside the city. So the Prophet, what did the Prophet do? The Prophet preferred the advice or the opinion of the youth. And so the Battle of Badr took place outside the city. When we put the matter to our own wisdom and we just think of this issue of consulting, or let's say have the example of a war, is it good to allow the enemy to come all the way, to come into your city, into your home, and then fight? Or you should fight the enemy before they enter the territory, the your land, or even your hometown? Of course, if we look at concrete examples, and if we look at the result, we see that it's always recommended that you fight the enemy before they enter your hometown. In the holy war of Taif, the Prophet consulted his commanders, his officers, and those who were in charge, you know. Some were saying, okay, we have to change the location, the headquarters. Some, you know, said, we do this and that. You know, the Prophet consulted them. That's what matters a lot, you know. Welcome to your program For a Better Life. In the consultation session, it's common to express differing views. You know, some views are in conflict with some others. Each person tries to defend his own ideas and to condemn those of others. There must be a strong moderator or a manager present who could gather all views, sort them out, and adopt the best view out of them, you know. The Prophet of Allah, he was the wisest person, but even then he consulted his companions, and that's why the Quran says, وَشَاوِرْهُمْ فِي الْأَمْرِ فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ. There's no doubt that the Prophet was connected to Allah. He was the Prophet of Allah, but even then the God tells the Prophet, after you consult them, especially in the matters related to war, then فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ, after you are decided, then you have to leave the matter to God and then go ahead, do tawakkul and consign your matters to Allah. So this is what we all have to do, you know. After consulting, we shouldn't stop there and do nothing. We have to go ahead after we are advised. So the person, the people, you know, mu'minin, should follow suit. Just as the Prophet sought other people's advice, we should also consult other people in matters which are important to our life, to our faith, and to the faith of the society. Obviously, there is also another important example. For example, the Holy Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him and his family, consulted his companions and his followers about the peace treaty of Hudaybiyah, which is one of the most important events that took place in the lifetime of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. And everyone was opposed to peace. You know, we should fight the enemies, we should fight the idolaters, the pagans. But then what did the Prophet do after consulting all the followers? He decided that he should have a peace treaty with the pagans. He signed a peace treaty with them, and it proved that the treaty was in the best interest of Muslims. That's why the Quran says, وَشَاوِرْهُمْ فِي الْأَمْرِ فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ. Of course, we should always consign our matters to Allah, and we should put our trust in Him. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.